I'm back.
Great, great. Well, I promise not to take too much of your time, but I did want to try to get into, in February, we're going to do a Ronald Reagan, you know, kind of a 100-year anniversary thing, I guess 100 years of his birth at this point.
Right.
And you're so much an important part, in my mind at least, of the Reagan legacy. You were sort of the necessary foil in the sense that the public needed somebody to question this guy who was so charming and genial that he could kind of talk the spots off a leopard. What do you make of the Reagan legacy? You know, I wonder sometimes, has it been overblown? I mean, as you pointed out, he had a great first term. He had a very iffy second term, in my opinion, although he did continue the pressure on the Soviet Union to either compete or collapse, and they ultimately collapsed. But how do you think the historical view of Reagan is really in any way fair or accurate, or has he been mythologized to the point of absurdity?
Well, at the moment, there's a lot of mythology there, and the Republican Party, I think, is just now beginning to realize that they have got to abandon running as if Ronald Reagan was still alive.
Hmm.
Just as eventually the Democrats realized that Franklin Roosevelt was no longer the person you talked about as a Democrat. But I think in history, and who can say, David, I mean, the people who may write the ultimate history of Ronald Reagan, probably their parents aren't born yet, but I think history is going to treat him pretty well. I certainly believe he's going to be well above the line, whatever that line, when we judge presidents, happens to be. Principally, I believe, because of his foreign policy toward the Soviet Union, as well as others, because he clearly hastened the collapse of communism and collapse of the Soviet Union by spending so much on building up U.S. military might. They just couldn't match it. I mean, Gorbachev is now thought of someone who somehow aided in the dismantling of communism. Well, I think inadvertently he did, but that was not his goal, as you know. He was smart enough to figure out that they couldn't continue the way they were, so he tried to do something, unfortunately, unlike the Chinese. He tried to change the system of openness and the way of government control rather than the system of the economy and how government controlled that. But in any event, I think Reagan is going to be given credit for hastening the fall of the Soviet Union, which was clearly, from our security standpoint, and maybe the world's, a very good thing.
What about your relationship with Ronald Reagan? It was one of sort of a professional interaction, of course, but you also later, I believe, developed, the two of you had sort of an admiration for each other, I believe. Are there some anecdotes?
Well, you use the correct word. I think he saw me as a foil in a sense because he, you know, I used to tell people who would attack what I did and say I was trying to destroy this great president and put the country in jeopardy. I said, look, if the president of the United States can't handle me, we're in bad trouble. Don't worry. He can handle me and has demonstrated that time and time again easily. I think also, and I say this facetiously, I think it was a case of two hams recognizing each other and playing off to some extent. Now, let me be very careful. Again, when I asked him questions, it was not because I wanted to be the ham. I have my own style, but before people took notice of me in the Reagan presidency, that was the style I deployed in Washington as a reporter for years and years and years, but that's something I adapted for. It was just me. But on the other hand, he saw in me something that appealed to him from the standpoint of rising to the bait and tap dancing a little better. You know, he was Jimmy Cagney, and I was just a guy who came out of the chorus. I did learn to like him immensely. Now, as a reporter, you and I and all the people who work for Newsmax try to separate their personal views from their professional work with, in my case, politicians. I'm a political reporter. But over the years, I found that it was not possible, and observing other people in the press room who I knew didn't like his policies, and I didn't like some of his policies to this day. Many of the domestic policies I thought were the wrong way. But I would watch them too. His charm was such that it was not possible to dislike this man. Maybe two or three people who knew in the United States say they hated Ronald Reagan, but not many. They opposed him. They didn't like him. Tip O'Neill never hated him. They opposed him. The idea that he and Tip would knock down, a glass of scotch at 6 o'clock was nonsense. They saw each other on St. Patrick's Day on rare occasions where a bipartisan meeting would be held at the White House. But it was just not possible to dislike the man. And I found I more and more liked him as a person, but of course I was not on his social level. I was a reporter, and he was president. I knew the difference. I grew to like him a lot. And when he left the presidency, of course, then I was a little freer to express that.
Did you, in his last days of the presidency, as he was headed on the way out, did you ever have a chance to have an interaction with him that was a little bit more on a personal than a professional level?
No, although I saw him. Ronald Reagan was not an introspective person. Ronald Reagan did not sit there and philosophize about himself, about conditions. The last question I asked him when he was president was at his last press conference, and it was the obvious and usual question that is always asked of someone in that condition, and that is, Mr. President, looking back on your presidency, what were the things that you thought you did that were, I'm paraphrasing my question, that turned out really well,
mm-hmm.
and what things that you wish now you may have done differently? Now, that's the question which says, in effect, okay, philosophize, talk about yourself, talk about your president. And what we heard, David, was his talking points on taxes, his talking points on the Soviets, his talking points on that big woman in that Cadillac in Chicago that was driving around, and while she was on welfare, I mean, we didn't hear someone, he said, well, at the press conference, I asked you whether you personally, on those rare occasions, and they were very rare, where I was either in a very small group on two occasions fleetingly, just the two of us. And I mean fleetingly. I don't mean we sat down there for 15 minutes or 30 minutes and chewed the fat. In going back to California on what was Air Force One until they turned over the reins that January day, I was one of the few reporters on the plane. And we went up front, we sat around, and he was no longer president, he no longer had to worry about his words, no longer had to, you know, if there was a time where you, and I've done this with Jimmy Carter, I've done it with George Herbert Walker Bush while I wasn't the White House correspondent, I've done it with even Bill Clinton, who would say things to me after he left the presidency that were more intimate nature. Even there, he simply wouldn't engage on a, okay, I've just run it, and let's just talk it all over. You're just not that kind, David.
What was your reaction? I guess my last question, what was your reaction on a personal level when you heard the news that he had this terrible illness?
Well, I think we all knew it was coming, not because we were medical people, but after he left the presidency particularly, it became clear on the occasions where you would see him in public that the mind was just simply not working. And I don't mean the Reagan mind where you forget names or the dates or, you know, things like that. That was always what he was. But you could see one time Queen Elizabeth was in the United States. And my memory was that there was an occasion in Florida, don't ask me why it was in Florida, where television cameras were present. And he and the Queen were chatting, and it was clear from his conversation with her that part of him just wasn't there. It wasn't a question of remembering dates or names or whatever. It was just a question of how you talk to people. And then, therefore, we look back, and you could think of, a couple of occasions when he was president, when he would do something, say something that didn't make a lot of sense, but clearly wasn't just Ronald Reagan denying that, cutting taxes this far would not ever raise revenue. It wasn't a policy thing. It was just that the mind was slipping. It was like the old phonograph record with a needle that kept slipping from back to the same groove, back to the same groove, back to the same groove. So it was a shock in the sense it was sad, but it certainly wasn't There are two stories about that which have nothing to do with me that just ring in my ears. One was the late Michael Deaver said the last time he saw Reagan was somehow in the late 90s. Reagan was still coming in on occasion to his office in Century City in Los Angeles. Deaver, of course, one of his closest aides, helped him out so much from the standpoint of public appearances. And he said, the president wanted to see you. So he went in. He said, Reagan was reading a book. He said, Mr. President, glad to see you, sir. What are you doing? He said, reading a book. And Mike said, I said to him, well, sir, what's the book about? He said, horses. And kept on reading. He said, it was uncomfortable silence. And he said, it's been great seeing you, sir. And he left. And the second story is, which may be apocryphal, but I've heard it now from people who weren't there, but claim they've heard it from at least one person who was there. At his home there, at 667, they wouldn't have 666, right, because that was the devil's number. George Shultz came to see him again in the late 90s and spent a few minutes with him and left. Reagan turned to a person and said, you know, I don't know who that was, but I know that he was a very important person. And I'm thinking, oh, Mr. President, your Secretary of State was a very important person, but who are you? Hmm. I mean, the mind had simply gone. So it was a sad thing. It was a terrible thing at the end.
Hey, if you could... If you could go back in time and jump up in a news conference and ask Ronald Reagan one more question today, what do you think you might be curious about, or what might you ask?
You mean about today's events, events that are going on today?
Sure.
Because, again, it would be a fool's errand to go back and try to get him to be philosophical and try to get him to say, well, you know something?
Yeah.
When I did this, I now think that was the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not going to work. People sometimes say to me, would you like to interview Osama bin Laden? I said, no. What is he going to tell me? We're terrible people. He hates us. He wants us dead. Fine. Or would you like to interview the Pope? As a matter of fact, I wouldn't. Not because I'm anti-Catholic at all, but because the Pope would answer in terms of his catechism and the Church's dogma. And he would not say, well, let me tell you, when I was a kid, I was 17. I mean, it's not going to happen. So with Reagan, you can't do that. So it would be some question today about the state of the country or the world. I mean, I did interview him a year after he left the presidency, or almost, when the Berlin Wall came down. That night, we had a program called Primetime Live that I did with Diane Sawyer. He came in live to his office in Century City. And, of course, obviously, I began by saying, former President Reagan is with us tonight. Many people, I think rightly, will give him the credit for helping bring down this wall, which is dismantled in front of our eyes. He answered the questions. Yes, I always, I always told you that I always thought that communism could not succeed. And when you gave your famous Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Well, it was a good interview, I thought, but it didn't get beyond again just the. Just the facts, ma'am, just the facts.
I wonder what his advice would be for a Republican Party that's still very much on the mend these days.
I don't know. Remember, Ronald Reagan as governor, when they passed Medicare, said it should be dismantled. Mm-hmm. And he, earlier on, when he was stumping for GE, he was in the mood of still saying Social Security should be repealed. So what would be his advice today? Would he say, look, guys, you fought the good fight, I believe on principle, most of you, but now you got to make it work and try to perfect it and all of that and drop this business. Would he say that? No, I don't think so. But would he say, yes, get in there, fight him, make the American public realize that socialism is taking over, it's Armageddon, the country. I trust and hope he wouldn't do that. You know, he was a pragmatist, too. I'll leave you with this thought, and then I got to run in the airport. And that is this. You remember, he engineered, through a Democratic Congress, because of his clout and the work of his people on the Hill, that huge tax cut in 1981. You were there, David.
Yes, I was.
And it was a great victory for his point of view. But they came to him, remember, at the end of the year, and said, sir, I mean, we're not just Stockman, but James A. Baker III, deeply trusted, said, you know, this is too much. We have cut too deep. We've got to restore some revenue. And he gladly, therefore, signed the bill that went through Congress, and with his blessing, to restore $98 billion of the $300 billion in taxes at the moment that was calculated that they'd cut, because he understood that, all right, but for, on the sake of my principle, we're going to let the country go down the drain from the standpoint of its economy? No. He did that repeatedly. People thought he was inflexible. He was not inflexible. He had an appearance with his principles of saying, we must do this, we must do this, we must do this, and to marching orders to his people, now get it done. But if they came to him and said, you know, we've got the Marines in Lebanon, but they're being blown up and killed, did he say, well, we're sending the 3rd Armored Division? No. You'll remember he withdrew them.
Yeah,
I mean, so that was a Ronald Reagan I also admired. Good politicians, like good generals, know when to retreat. If one policy had been allowed to retreat from Stalingrad, Hitler saved 110,000 troops, the war would still have been lost. But the point is, he knew how to do that.
Excellent.
David, good talking to you.
Yes, sir, and you've been so generous. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, sir. Bye-bye.